Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're about to have a great visit. I promise you it'll be great because all the others we've ever had have been outstanding with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, whom we've missed for a couple of weeks. Joan, welcome back.
Hi there, Jim. Thanks.
It's good to have you back.
Thanks. Good to be back.
We've missed you.
I should hope so.
Well, and didn't you miss me, Joan?
Well, desperately, right.
All right. As long as we got that straightened out.
Okay.
Joan, last week when Jim Ostroff was here, we talked a little bit about Mrs. Kiplinger.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to say, folks, I want to remind you that Austin Kiplinger, who's a member of our Brain Trust and who I hope will be on the show next month and maybe, if not August, in September for the anniversary of Kiplinger. Mr. Kiplinger is, I believe, about to become 89.
Joan. I think you're right about that. Yeah.
I believe he's about to be 89. I first met him when he was in 1998. So that would have been, he would have just been turned to 80. He was on my show first time then. This man is a national treasure.
Yep, you've always said that.
And his wonderful wife of decades and decades.
63 years, I believe.
63 years.
That's not how old she was. That's how long they were married.
They called her Go-Go.
Yes,
her
they
name
did.
Was it
Mary Louise.
Mary Louise.
Yes.
She passed away a couple of weeks ago.
Yes, she did.
And a great partnership came to an end. And so I just wanted you to know, since you and I have talked about him before, and I wanted my audience to know that our hearts and our prayers go out to him. Will you please tell him that we dedicated the show to her last week?
Oh, yes, I'll be happy to
Jim Ostroff and I did.
Sure.
Tell him we dedicated the show to her and that we're thinking about him. And folks, I'll tell you, if we had more Austin Kiplingers in the world would be a much better place.
Boy, that's sure true.
Yeah. I mean, I'd vote for him for president.
Yeah, he'd be some kind of public official.
He'd be some kind of... The politicians wouldn't like him, though, I don't think.
No. He'd be too honest.
Anyway, occasionally on this show, we stop and take a few minutes to recognize really special people. And anybody who kept Mr. Kiplinger, helped make him who he is, which is just a wonderful human being. If you ever get a chance to meet him, folks, it'll be a red-letter day for you. I have met him. It was a big deal to me. She had to be a special lady, and so we still think about her.
Absolutely.
Joan, let's move over and talk about the coverage this week on page one of the Kiplinger letter. You're talking about the financial markets, and you're calling it the Wild West. Tell us why.
Yeah, we're saying a risk be damned rush to make one's fortune.
Risk
wow.
be damned. Damn the risk, full speed ahead, right?
Now, see, and then next line I don't get, and leverage is the wagon train. I don't quite get that, but...
Well, that's easy to... Why don't you get... What part of that don't you get, Joan?
Well, why can't we just say people are going into debt?
Oh, because it's leverage, because debt is what consumers do. Leverage is what businesses do.
Oh, I see.
Just stay with me, Joan.
I'll
teach you all these terms. And you'll
thanks.
You'll be good.
Okay.
Well, this is a shocking number, though, Joan. You got to admit here, in the second paragraph, they're staggering... Increases tell the story. Tell us what it says there.
Well, we're talking about, first of all, acquired firms are loaded up with debt. $317 billion in 2006. Mm-hmm. And then here, hedge funds, which I barely understand, borrowed eight times more in 2006 as they did in 2002. $1.46 trillion?
Right.
Wow.
Well, and think about this, Joan. Just above that, in 2000, there were 4% of the deals that used leverage buyouts, but a third of the mergers and acquisitions in 2007 were highly leveraged.
Yeah.
And so what this amounts to, instead of going in and buying, and I'm not an M&A expert, folks. I'm not a merger and acquisition expert, but I did sleep at the Holiday Inn Express last night, Joan. And so instead of going in with a stock swap or having the cash to buy out, or doing some kind of a, you know, some kind of an asset, you know, allocation or whatever. These companies are going into debt. They're borrowing the money, and you point out the fact that the obligations are bundle packages of junk bonds, subprime loans, and so on.
Yep.
And you know, Joan, the leverage is okay. I talk to small business owners all the time about about the fact that we have to borrow money. I don't know how any small business owner grows in the 21st century without some kind of debt, either, you know, typically from a bank, because we can't earn profits enough to grow businesses. I mean, we want to grow at 10%. Our profits are not going to be 10% a year. We've got to get that money from somewhere, and typically it's going to come from debt. So leverage is okay. Too much leverage is dangerous, and leverage combined with ego, Joan, is a Molotov cocktail.
Ooh.
Leverage and ego is what takes people down.
Yeah, that's true. That's
the
true.
Ability to borrow money. And the attitude that you're so smart that you know nothing can go wrong, or the compelling allure of the greed factor is so strong, and your ego combined with the ability to borrow money, I've seen it happen so many times that it's almost always, Joan, a disaster.
I can see that.
So what I wonder is, you know, when you look at some of these leveraged buyouts, Joan, with where they're using debt to fund them, the buyouts, you know, what you got to do is you got to go inside of those and say, okay, who are the managers? Are these managers that have taken calculated risk with the leverage, or are these people who are cowboys?
Yeah.
And what is the government doing about all this, Joan? The government has the ability to regulate some of this.
Well, it's interesting you should ask that, because we're saying that the government's having a tough time doing that. We're saying that they just can't keep up. Things have, I guess, changed and gotten so much more sophisticated that it's very hard for the regulator to know what to do.
Especially since some of these transactions are probably involving international money.
Oh, that's a good point, right?
Well.
But they're also afraid. I mean, they don't want to let everything run wild, but on the other hand, they don't want to overreach and kill deals that might be good for the economy.
The ones that I was talking about, where they're good managers, they just happen to be using. And who gets to decide that? See, that's the dicey part. And I don't want the government deciding that. But it could be dangerous for the global economy. With global money, you got global dangers. When we come back, I'm going to compare some of this, the potential for this, to what happened back in the 80s with the SNL crisis, as only I can do, Joan, since I slept in the Holiday Inn Express last night. But I also lived through those days. 20 after, Joan Pride and I will be right back. Stay with us. Back, it's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, we're talking about all the leverage buyouts, the increased incidence and volume of leverage buyouts, and there's been so many of these. In fact, as you know, Joan, many of these were public companies that were taken private.
Right.
They took the company off the market, took them back private, and made them into, you know, through leverage, through debt.
That's right.
Joan, when I look back, you know, when we talk, as you do here on page one, about some of the dangers and some of the possible government oversight of the regulators and that sort of thing, I've now lived long enough to have lived through a few wacky times. You know, one of my favorite books is a book that by Charles McKay, which was written in like 1848 or something, like 1847, something like that, late 1840s. And the title is Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds.
Ooh.
And in the book, he talks about the tulipomania. Remember that, when tulip bulbs back in the 1600s or something, tulips were selling for like $4,000 a bulb or something like that, something ridiculous. There was also the South Sea Bubble, and the Mississippi scheme. And these were over a period of, you know, each one of these were in different centuries, in 1600s, 1700s, 1800s, that kind of thing. And these are all schemes that were put together. And even though most of those, some of them were basically, you know, were almost criminal. Some of them were just like the tulipomania. That was just where people just went nuts over certain things, and things became overvalued. But then we had in the 90s, we had, you know, the dot-com nonsense.
Yes.
Which there wasn't real leverage like debt, but there was an awful lot of capital raised through the public markets, which is a kind of leverage.
Right.
That for companies that had no value. And then to go back into the 80s, Joan, I was in the real estate syndication business back in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And people were building apartment buildings and apartment complexes and commercial buildings and all kinds of things in the 80s, and they were using leverage like crazy, primarily through the SNLs, the Savings and Loan Organizations.
Right.
Remember the Savings and Loan meltdown?
Only too well.
Of the 1987
yes.
or so.
Boy, that's a long time ago now.
It's 20 years, and
yeah,
remember how that hurt the economy?
Sure.
And see that happened largely because the regulators finally the Congress passed a tax law that
right.
basically put an end to the tax advantages that those transactions were useful for.
Yes.
Were used for, and so my point is that was an example of where the regulators came in one fell swoop. The government came in one fell swoop, ended the relationship between the SNLs and their customers, caused the SNL meltdown.
Yes.
And it caused a lot of trouble.
Exactly.
Now, the good news is that, I mean, the truth is those things needed to be done. I feel they could have done them a little bit more gradually.
Right.
And so my question is if the government is looking at some kind of curtailing of the mergers, you know, are they going to do it? Is anybody doing who's looking at this? Is anybody using the perspectives of that I just talked about? For example, the SNL thing.
Well, you know, we tend not to learn from history, I think. So
especially
I don't know.
Especially the government.
Yeah, right.
No, really. I mean, I think if I were advising them, and you know, I often do advise the government on many things, Joan, as you know.
Do you now?
Of course, yeah. The president calls me all the time, and Reed, and me and Harry Reid, we're just like this, you know. They call me.
I never would have thought.
The VP too, yeah. All these things. But when they call me, and they do, I'll have to remind them about. But I do think seriously, those, you know, we can look back and see. I think the SNL thing could be a model for what to do about all these mergers, leverage buyouts.
Yeah.
So what would happen, Joan, if the economy, you know, another thing, Joan, these leverage buyouts are not unlike the subprime lending issues that are going on right now, right?
Well, yeah, I can see the parallels, because you've kind of had a bit of a house of cards there in terms of these folks who didn't really qualify for loans getting them, and now the chickens are coming home to roost because they can't afford the payments with the interest rates going up.
Because by contract, the note, the interest rate goes up, they have to start servicing debt, not just interest.
Right.
Lots of different things. Whatever the construct, the payment starts becoming more than it was.
Right.
And now, as you say, maybe the people can't. They not only bought a car, but a house, but they bought a couple of new cars. They got all kinds of other stuff that they got to pay for. And so, as you say, the chickens are coming home to roost. What would happen in terms of the leveraged buyout situation if the economy softened? If the global economy somehow softened, if we wound up with, as some people are predicting, Joan, $100 barrel oil.
Ugh.
If we wound up with something like that and that curbed the global economy, you know, and all this leverage is out there on these companies, and I don't want to sound, you know, I don't want to go too far here, but, you know, that's the kind of contingent challenge we could have.
It's kind of a scary scenario.
It is kind of scary. So, yeah. Folks, let's, you know, these are all things to blend into your overall perspective about where we're going to be in the future. We got some dicey situations out there, but we also got a lot of good news, and we'll be talking about some of that when we come back after these messages. It's 29 after. I'm Jim Blasingame. Joan Pride is our guest. Stay with us.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.